Welcome to the Right Place podcast, where we learn with you how to build connections that matter, relationships that last, and businesses that thrive. My name is John Watson, and today I'm joined by my LinkedIn friend, Mark Sham. Mark is a world traveler, entrepreneur, and professional speaker, and he creates some amazing content focusing on showing off South Africa to the world. Mark, so lovely to have you. Welcome to the Right Place, and thank you for your time.
John, what an honor and a privilege. Thank you for having me, man.
Awesome. Mark, you and I connected via LinkedIn. We haven't met in person yet or hung out yet, but I'm sure that will happen soon when you're back in South Africa. You're currently in Switzerland, chasing the sun. How are things going that side?
Yeah, attempting to chase the sun. Europe is currently experiencing one of its wettest springs that they've had on record. But there is one beautiful thing that I love about Europe in the summer, regardless of whether the sun shines or not, and that is how late the sun goes down. It is just so epic to be walking around the city at just after 9 o'clock and you've still got daylight. So wonderful to be here, but I must tell you, there's no place like South Africa, and there's no place like the South African weather.
Excellent, Mark. No, that's wonderful to hear. I'm glad you miss it already. You've only been there a few days. You recently posted that you want to make a video to entice Swiss people and I think people who live in Europe to come to South Africa and visit our beautiful country. What's your idea over there?
Yeah, it's partially why I'm in Zurich at the moment. I have this platform called Like a Tourist, and it started off by trying to get South Africans to act like tourists in their own country. But the more time I spend in Europe, I start to realize how many people have not visited South Africa. We have so many advantages to people who come over to South Africa, the kind of quality that we offer relative to the affordability that we have, the fact that South Africa is so much more than Cape Town and the Kruger. I just think that people aren't well educated on how incredible South Africa truly is. I know this because the people who have visited South Africa from abroad tend to visit over and over again. So I think my job is to spend a certain amount of time in places like Europe and just try to educate the masses on why South Africa is such an incredible destination. The elephant in the room is that, you know, we do have a stigmatism around crime. And I think to a degree, rightfully so. But unfortunately, we get the negative of that stigmatism too, being that crime is prevalent all around the world and it's not spoken about properly. So long story short, it's kind of my mission to spend more time in Europe advertising South Africa to the masses to get them over. Because I think once they do it, they'll be hooked.
Absolutely. I think that's a great angle. And I've spoken to people before exactly about this. They come here for one time. And they fall in love with it. They fall in love with the countryside. They go all over the country, the Kruger, the Cape, all the common places. But then when they start coming back once or twice more, then they start going to the Northern Cape, to the Free State. They visit Lesotho. They visit Swaziland. They visit the Northwest. And they start seeing that we've got so much to offer, more than just Cape Town. People think it's so far. But, I mean, you can fly into Cape Town and fly into Joburg from any country in the world nowadays.
Yeah, and I think Cape Town and the Kruger has epic marketing. But the rest of the South Africa doesn't have the same level of marketing. You know, I mean, again, I recently moved from Gauteng to Cape Town in the last year. I've always loved the Western Cape. It is remarkable. But so is the Garden Route. So is the Karoo. You know, I could keep going as to all the incredible spots that aren't just Cape Town and the Kruger. There is so much. And I just think it needs more exposure. It needs more marketing, especially to people abroad. You know, there's some small towns that I've visited and I've showcased through our channels. And South Africans don't know where that is. I'll give you an example, like New Bethesda, right? 40 kilometers outside of Graaff-Reinet. When I went there last year and I put up pictures about this place, so many people were like, where is this? That's South Africans.
Yes.
So you can imagine if that's how locals perceive a lot of these hidden gems, then what about people from abroad? So I think the more that they start to understand that South Africa has more to offer than just Cape Town and the Kruger, we'll all be better for it. Because really, we just don't appreciate the absolute variety that we have in South Africa. And it's taken me moving twice to really appreciate what we've got going back on in South Africa, despite the many problems that we face.
No, that's incredible. I think we've just finished the elections. I know they're busy negotiating And you've got my vote for Minister of Tourism. I think that's a really key position. It can bring a lot of growth and a lot of external revenue into the country. So if you want to put your hand up for that, I think a lot of people will support you. You've already got the video evidence and the passion and the energy for it. So maybe that's your next calling.
Yeah, you know, over the years, I've been quite vocal about government, about tourism, about small business and education, because these have just been my natural interests. But I must say that, I mean, I know we're talking tongue in cheek, but I've always felt that the role I can best play for my country is in the private sector and working with government. Mm. Right now, we need a government that we can work with. And I think the elections, without getting political, was clearly a groundbreaking moment in our history. You know, for the ruling party to lose its majority, however it worked out, and continues to work out. It's monumental for the first time in 30 years. So we're going through some kind of transition. What happens in the next few weeks is critical. But I think that, you know, sometimes it's been difficult to articulate to any government that all you want is the necessary conditions for the private sector to do what it does well. But government still has to keep the private sector in check. Capitalism left unchecked can also be a little bit skew. But I tell you, if in another world, I would love to put my hand up for Minister of Tourism. Just again, just as an avid traveler, I just don't think people fully realize how remarkable South Africa is as a tourism destination. Even South Africans, because I think we tend to repeat the places that we're very familiar with. But if you were to road trip all over the country, it's just hard not to fall in love with our country.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I've got friends that specialize in traveling overseas. And that's fine. But if you're not exploring just even like the Northern Cape or the Free State or Mpumalanga, I think you're missing out. We've got amazing things on our doorstep that's within a couple of hours drive or a short flight. And you can have a world-class experience that tourists are paying a fortune to come and experience. You'd rather go to take the Flight Center Special and go to Phuket for 10 days or go to Bali. And there's nothing wrong with that, but there's amazing experiences that people are coming to South Africa for, and we just ignore them, or we're not interested, or we're just uneducated. So I think the education works both ways. It's educating the locals, but also the internationals.
Well, that's how the Like a Tourist brand came about. You know, it wasn't like one day I woke up and said, let me try build a business in tourism. It was more that I am an avid traveler. I've traveled to about 40 different countries. I love traveling abroad. But at the same time, I love traveling locally. But in particular, when the pandemic hit and the international borders were closed, I had to get my travel itch scratched in some form or fashion. And so when they opened up the provincial borders, I just got into my car and I flattened South Africa for a good year. From about the middle of 2020, I haven't stopped. And that was when I realized how little I truly knew about my own country. And I thought I knew a lot.
Mm.
And so it was quite ironically the closing of the international borders that made me start to act like a tourist in my own country. And then every time I'd get back from a trip, I would say to my friends, for example, guys, I went to this incredible small town and we did this and that happened. And they would kind of look at me with this cool story face. And in that moment, I realized I couldn't tell them. I had to show them. And so as one of my businesses started to progress and we got hold of a videographer, I started to kind of moonlight his services toward Like a Tourist so that we could capture on video what some of these small towns or spaces was like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite interesting to see the response to those videos, because now people could visually understand what I was talking about. And I found that a lot of people would write to me privately and say, hey, I watched your video and I've got a trip scheduled to Nasna or to, you know, insert small town here. And that was when we knew we were onto something. So it is just that. It is just a case of documenting the many incredible places to visit in South Africa on video, putting it on YouTube and getting people into the mindset of wanting to visit these places for themselves. And there's no question. For me, I get stopped all over South Africa these days from people saying, hey, I watched your video and afterwards I went to Nasna and I did XYZ. So, you know, it's a great feeling to be part of that. But even better that more people are discovering the beauty that South Africa has to offer.
No, and we've still got a lot more towns for you to explore. I think the first one that I saw of yours was the Knysna video. It's a place that you tend to sometimes drive past. It depends if you're going to Plet or you're going to PE side, and you might stop there or stop in Wilderness. But there's just so much to see there. It's such a historic town. It's such a unique environment. I mean, you've got the garden route, but different pieces of the garden route are so different from one another. You've got the white, almost white sandy, perfect beaches of Plet, and then you've got the groggy nature, deep forests of like Nature's Valley. You've got the bungee jumping and all of that. I mean, there's just so much to offer just in that little space. You could explore that area for 10 years and you wouldn't see everything.
That has to be one of my favorite stretches, the N2. You know, you could go all the way, depending on which area you're coming from, all the way from Cape Town. And then once you get towards George, Sedgefield, Knysna, Plet, and beyond, it's just remarkable. But even there, the mindset of being, you know, the Leica tourist mindset is one of, I don't know everything, even in my own hometown. Mm-hmm. You know, I was born and raised in Johannesburg, and it took a trip to London for me to realize, but how much do I actually know of Joburg or Gauteng? How much do I venture from Bryanston to Magaliesburg? Or, you know, you don't do these as much. So I think it's more a mindset. Like in the same way that Cape Town is not Table Mountain, there are many amazing little hidden gems and spots and things to do, but it requires you to be curious and to want to lean in, research, watch videos, read articles, and then go see for yourself. So again, I'm besotted with what South Africa has to offer. And it's just a matter of time before we create more video content, more blog post articles. And we're just one part of the ecosystem. I mean, TikTok is one of my favorites to go on. If you just see the number of creators on TikTok sharing hidden gem cabins, amazing places 2.5 hours away from Cape Town, little spots, little towns, new restaurants, there is so much going.
No, it's incredible. It's incredible to watch. Mark, you've got a ton of energy and enthusiasm. Were you always destined to become an entrepreneur, or did you burn your fingers a bit with a normal desk job like the rest of us?
It's a good question. I think there are definitely some people who are more guided toward entrepreneurship naturally. I think my personality is like that. I remember being at school and I would look at the way something was done and I would think, surely there's a better way to do it. And I guess at the heart of entrepreneurship, that's what it is. You're looking at something, you don't like what you see and you want to make a better version of it. You want to plug a gap. You want to solve a problem. That is entrepreneurship in part. And I think that's always been in me. But it took me getting kicked out of matric. I never finished. And so I don't have a formal education. So that kind of pushed me into entrepreneurship in a bit of a raw, not so nice way. I don't recommend getting kicked out of school at 17 and moving out and, you know, you know nothing. So I got a real crash course in entrepreneurship from an early age. But by the time I got to about 21, 22, I started to figure it out. And I kind of instinctively knew at that point that I was never going to walk into someone's office without a matric even and manage to catch their attention. I had to do it on my own. So yeah, that my journey, I wouldn't say is unique, but it wasn't born out of boredom on a desk job. But the more I work with corporates, the more I work with bigger companies, and I think about that classic 9-to-5, it is just not for me. I don't trash it in any way. It's not like I think of myself as better than someone who has a 9-to-5. I think it works for many people. There's a famous saying, entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, but everybody should try once. And I quite like that because it isn't for everyone. We tend to glamorize entrepreneurship. And, you know, we look at the top 10 entrepreneurs in the world and we think of them as the norm, but they're the antithesis of entrepreneurship. They represent the 0.0001%. You know, so for every Mark Zuckerberg, there's 990,000 other knobs that didn't quite get it right. So, I mean, entrepreneurship is, it's a mix of everything, really. And probably my favorite aspect of entrepreneurship is that it's a lot like psychological warfare. The skills that you learn in entrepreneurship are highly transferable to many other facets of your life. And so for that reason, I wish more people gave it a go. But it is much more a mental game than anything else, because you, what is that famous saying? It's like standing on the edge of the abyss, chewing glass with a smile on your face. Whenever I talk about entrepreneurship, I try to talk about it the other way. It is rewarding, there's no question, but it is one of the hardest things you will do. And I think we do ourselves a major disservice speaking up entrepreneurship like it's this, you know, like when people say to me, I want to become my own boss so that I can work when I want. Good luck. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And for every one person that gets that right, there's 990,000 others that don't. So I got kicked out of school. I kind of meandered around for a few years, finally got my bearings at about 21, 22, really picked up at 25, and I've been going ever since, with the blip being the pandemic in between, which tried to destroy my entire life, but also the best thing that ever happened to me. And here we are speaking, John.
No, excellent, Mark. And one of those companies that you ended up starting was Suits and Sneakers, which is, I just love the name. I'm a big fan of good names, like a Tourist, Suits and Sneakers. If someone's got a good name, I can get behind it. You didn't want to copy paste anything in the education space. You really wanted to break the mold. What was that like going into that, not knowing if this is going to work? But I've got this good name and I've got this good idea, because sometimes passion isn't enough to get you over the line. You've got to get something right eventually.
Yeah, it's a good question. Suits and Sneakers was born primarily because I got kicked out of school, which meant I couldn't rely on formal education to thrive.
Mm.
And instead, inadvertently, I kind of stumbled into the world of informal education. And to define that, I think of it as using the internet to learn a skill, YouTube, podcasts, books, going to events, speaking to other people who have been there before. These are all informal ways of learning about the world. And I started to think about the future of education, which in my mind would become a blend of formal and informal education coming together, a lot like wearing suits and sneakers. You're right. A name is just a name until you've got a good name. And so that one seemed to stick. Where I kept saying to people, like, I think if you want to thrive in the future, you need a blend of both formal and informal. Mm. And so a lot of our events would be us dressing up with a suit jacket and sneakers on to represent that. So what I wanted to do was just show the world that the world was changing at a pace we had never seen before, and that sometimes the topics that are very important to learn about, it takes too long for them to take form in a curriculum. It takes too long for formal education to get hold of it. Sometimes these topics are moving. Think about right now, the rage is AI. The rate at which AI is increasing in change, in speed, in development. If you try to curriculum that, it would just, by the time you get it into print format, or it's just too long before it's outdated. And that's why informal education is so powerful. It's just that you don't get a certificate at the end. But that doesn't make it any less valuable. So I had this idea around how informal education had changed my life. Keep in mind, this was 10 years ago. Now I think it's widely accepted that you can learn a variety of skills online or through the internet or on YouTube or what have you. And I wanted to show people rather than tell people what it was like.
Mm.
And so, you know, for me, it wasn't about whether we were going to come right or not. I was lucky at the time. I had public speaking to kind of get me through personally from a financial perspective. So I had time to build out Suits and Sneakers. Mm. And I say to this day that I'll run Suits and Sneakers events till the day I die. Just there's a joy out of picking an interesting topic, gathering an audience of like-minded, curious individuals who want to just learn something. There's something in that process for me that I cannot get enough of. And that's Suits and Sneakers in a nutshell. It's obviously evolved over the years. It's had to, especially through the pandemic. But Suits and Sneakers just represents, I guess, the idea of a social learning club for adults. It represents this idea of becoming a forever educated human being, you know, where you become a self-directed, continuous learner that is eternally curious and never stops learning about the world. It represents a mindset. Two, you know, I'm big on mindset. So the way Like a Tourist for me is not a business, it's a mindset. Suits and Sneakers is being eternally curious and never not learning about the world and how it's changing. And so I guess that's why that brand will be around until the day I die. It's just, there's something about bringing, and then, you know, the community aspect, because when you run an event with a great speaker, you learn something on that night, but then you gathered with other people who are as curious with you. You get to interact with those people. And I think after the pandemic, we learned how incredibly vital community is more than ever. So that, I guess that's Suits and Sneakers in a nutshell. I'm passionate about it. Again, not the business, the concept is something I'm passionate about. And that's why I'm always begging more people to come join us.
No, that's excellent. And this fits in very nicely with the venue that you've created called The Tryst, which is the coolest, funkiest building that I've ever seen. I've only seen photos. I'm going to be up in Joburg soon, and I definitely want to swing by and take a peek inside the world you created there. And you've had so many incredible South African speakers coming to talk there recently. One of them I've met, John Sarna, and he actually said in their recent podcast on The Expansive, saying the world is moving so fast nowadays, he's finding it difficult to write a book. Because by the time he's written the book, that those concepts might be old news. They might be out of date because something new has launched, a new way of thinking has launched. You've also spoken there. You've had Richard Mulholland speak there as well, which is one of my favorite speakers as well. How has that been to create this space that gives you so much energy, but that has also become this community that people look out for and people want to attend? That must give you a lot of satisfaction, but also it gives you a lot of pride that we've built this, we built it out of COVID, built it through COVID, and now this thing is just grown in leaps and bounds every time.
Yeah, you know, The Tryst is, I suppose on one part it's complete accident, and on the other, nothing is ever an accident. If you go back to when I first started Suits and Sneakers, the only way the events would work is if a venue would offer me their space at no cost, because most of my events are offered to the public at no cost. People do have the ability to support the event by purchasing their ticket. But I've never wanted someone to not be able to learn something because they couldn't afford it. So I was always on the other side with Suits and Sneakers, using other people's venues. A lot of people were gracious in offering us their spaces, but you also didn't have the ability to plan long term. Like, I couldn't put a date in the calendar for 6 months' time, because what happens if the venue had a client on that date? So I never really thought about getting my own venue at first. But then when COVID hit, suddenly we couldn't run our events in person anymore. And one of the first things I did was to get virtual. I ran a webinar just using my laptop like this. The quality wasn't great for me. So I got hold of two old school broadcast cameras. Pretty quickly, some people had seen what I'd created. And a lot of people started writing to me privately, asking me if I could help them up the production level of their podcasts, webinars, etc. So we moved these two broadcast cameras to a WeWork, which at the time was empty because it was COVID. And this kind of taught me a little bit about this world. And before I knew it, I just wanted my own space that I could completely customize. But I wasn't trying to move into a massive building. I thought like 100 squares would do it. But as fate would have it, I found a building on property 24. It was 1,500 square meters. And just from the pictures, something was in me was drawn to, I just have to go have a look. And that turned out to be the venue that we landed up renting, which was an old gym in an office park. And when I got to the space, which is now known as The Tryst, I looked at this, what would be the eventing space. And my brain just said, the world is going to come back to in-person. Right now, they understand virtual. What happens when we skate toward where the hockey puck will be passed to? So what happens if we get a venue set up where we can have in-person and online, or the hybrid methodology, and we can rent the space out to other people, especially corporates, but we can use our own venue to run our own events? And so that's what we did. I had no clue what I was in for. The Tryst has been one of the hardest businesses to set up, just because of the timing coming. We set it up in May 2021. Wow. There were so many ups and downs we still had to face, so many more lockdowns, then load shedding. So it was an absolute slog. But yes, you're right. As we stand today, we have somehow figured out how to keep the doors open in 3 years. We just celebrated our third birthday at The Tryst. And on one end, The Tryst is a typical hybrid conferencing venue. We rent it out to corporate companies to host their events. We've got two video studios that works. But that is our resource that we can use to host our own events. So for now, the Trust has become the home to suits and sneakers events in Joburg. We have the ability of hosting up to 250 people in person, and we can live stream the event with three camera angles anywhere in the world. What a magnificent thing to be able to do. And we are able to record the talks and place them online afterwards. So it's actually made suits and sneakers much better. And the game plan moving forward is that we will end up setting up multiple versions of the Trust in different parts of the world. So we've got the Trust in Joburg right now. I'm busy working on setting up a second one in Cape Town, a third one in Zurich. And these will be hubs for where we can host suits and sneakers events around the world. And I just love bringing people together. Again, there is something, you know, you mentioned those names. If you've ever come to a suits and sneakers event where you get to listen to Rich Mulholland speak, he's always a firecracker with an interesting message. And you're always better for taking that hour and a half to listen to what he has to say. And so obviously through the years with suits and sneakers, I've been very lucky to form these relationships with a myriad of public speakers in South Africa who will give us this gap once a year to speak at no cost, which means we can offer those public talks pretty much at no cost. And we get together normally a full house to these events. And just, you know, the original slogan for TED Talks was ideas worth sharing, which we've never adopted formally, but I just love that concept, ideas worth sharing. And that's what we do from a South African perspective. The nice thing about doing it locally is that you're not listening to some American speaker with Americanized ideas. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it's like in South Africa, oftentimes we need localized ideas. I can't tell you, John, the joy that I get from seeing the Trust as a space for that community to thrive. I just think we're better for it. And so if I were to ever have an incentive to open more Trusts, I don't think it's financial because it's a really hard business. But it's much more the joy of creating those events and bringing people together. So I'm excited to see what comes in the next few years because now we've gotten through the hardest part of that business. I wouldn't say we're killing it. You know, we're not billionaires, but there's a little bit of money there that we can start to put back into the business and set up more versions of these. I think if you open up an eventing venue from a monetary perspective, it's a terrible business. I highly recommend for people to not open a Trust. It's a lot of money and it doesn't make sense. You know, there's a few eventing spaces that do a very great job and they make good money, but it's a hard business. And so I've never wanted to be a venue owner. But if you use the Trust as a engine room to build other things like suits and sneakers, like a Tourist, well, then it's a phenomenal business. It just takes so long.
No, that's wonderful to hear, Mark. I'm really looking forward to the Cape Town one opening. I would definitely support it and definitely help in any way. I think you're definitely a brother from another mother. I also just love bringing people together and never want money to get in the way of a good idea or a right reason to bring people together. And I think oftentimes people are trying to scratch the last cent out of something, or I'm not going to do this because no one's going to pay me. And like, but you're missing the bigger picture here. By serving, by giving, you can open up so many doors to other people and they're going to remember you as the connector, as the one that brought this together, started this. And if you just start with that mindset, you will get your dues, but maybe through a different channel, maybe through a different partnership or different opportunity. So don't let it stop you from doing the right thing. And I think something like this is definitely the right thing. And I agree with you in terms of the South African speakers. We've got incredible quality. I've seen some international speakers before and they've just missed the mark completely because they don't understand who we are. They don't talk our language. They don't know our history. And they almost talk at you. They don't talk with you. And oftentimes what I tell people is South Africans, we can just have a conversation like we're having today on this podcast. We can just have a conversation. It doesn't have to be an interrogation. It doesn't have to be a put-down session. And that is the beauty of being a South African. And we've got so many amazing, amazing people, like some of them we've mentioned today, and some of them that are still up and coming and have a lot of value to offer and just need an opportunity and a platform to do that, and they can take off.
You know, you bring up an interesting topic around monetization of these ventures that don't start out from a commercial basis but turn into it. You know, I think that what I've learned with suits and sneakers over the years is that, like, people will pay you if they get the value. And there's always, like, with enough time, you'll figure out the appropriate monetization model that works for everyone. So even right now, like with Suits and Sneakers as an example, we still offer the events for free, but it actually was, it took a conversation with someone once saying, but I want to pay you for it. You'd be surprised with our Suits and Sneakers event these days, we give people the option to pay for their tickets. And there are some events on the low end, 10% of the people pay. On the high end, 30% of the people pay. It's quite remarkable. The one change we've made is that if you want to watch the online version or the live stream version, you must pay, just because it's very easy to register for something that's online and then not pitch.
Yes.
So we kind of like, look, we're putting a lot of effort. It's extra staff. It's three camera angles. It's a world-class production. If you want to watch it, pay for it. And now we've gotten people into that. And I think it's more than fair. If you see, we don't just shove a webcam up there and hope that people watch it. Like it's well produced. And then beyond that, we've recently started the Suits and Sneakers membership program. Now, I'm not saying this from a plugging perspective, but just more like it's interesting. So we've said to a small group of people, we've got the membership program, and you can come to the events for free. It's willing buyer, willing seller. We put that offer out. But if you want just a slightly upgraded experience, if you want more in terms of community, if you want a library of all the previous events that we've recorded, if you just want the up experience, then come through. And we've made sure that at the base, if you come to the Suits and Sneakers event and you buy a free ticket, we still feed people at no cost. This is the beauty of having the Trist. You know, I can kind of control every aspect of the experience. But we haven't reduced the quality of the free ticket.
Yes.
We've just increased the quality of the paid for option. And it's remarkable how many we've got a waiting list for members. And even there, we've said, okay, we want to build it slowly and properly. And so now this membership program is becoming really viable for us from a monetary perspective without corrupting the free ticket. And so it just took a few years for me to work out, you can give them this free and people will pay for this. And I love that. I love that someone can come to our free event and have a wonderful experience. But I also love that other people are willing to pay for a better experience, if you want to call it that, or just a, you know. So the monetization model, if you don't rush it, I guess exactly like you said, you don't try to squeeze every last cent out of it. There is always a way that you can get it to work for everyone.
Yes.
Because I guess a business is not a business if you don't make enough money so that you can continue to open your doors to do it.
No, exactly. And I've actually seen this with a number of other creators on LinkedIn. Your free offer has got so much value that it's a no-brainer for me to pay for everything, because I actually want everything that you've got to offer. I'm so in tune with your vibe or your offer or the skills that I'm learning from you that I want everything. But I can hang along for the free ride and I'm going to get value, but paying for it is just it's just that natural next step. So I think you've kind of hit maybe the sweet spot there. People, you've got this track record of giving value, of showcasing world-class speakers, of having a great event, great catering, great drinks, great production as well. And now this is almost like the evolution of the space into, look, we can do this even better. You're going to pay for it. People are like, I don't mind paying for it. I've wanted to pay for it. Where do I sign up?
You hit the nail on the head. It just took us a while to figure that out and what it looks like. So I think we should never feel bad for wanting to charge for a service, but there is the iron law of the market, and it tells you very quickly if you're on the mark or not. And we tried other ways. I think the days of just straight out charging for an event. Okay, it depends on which event and what you're doing. But in our case, Suits and Sneakers, if we simply said it costs 200 Rand a ticket to attend, we would spend so much time trying to get people to attend. Whereas it's easier to say, look, come for free. Come see what we're about. Normally after three or four free events, people are like, that it's either for them or it's not.
Yes.
And the ones that it's for, they will jump up the next level to get the better experience. And in that way, because people's attention is so limited compared to what's out there and what's chomping at the bit for it. So I think free is a great product. I don't like discounting things anymore. I think free is a great idea. It gives everyone the ability to hey, John, come to an event two or three. Come see if it's for you. And if it is, then you can do this. And if it's not, no problem. And I think that our model, for example, will evolve. At some point, we will take the free option away. I think eventually when you've got enough demand. And I guess so it should. And some, but it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know how it works. It's just interesting. We're just figuring it out as we're going along. But that's, again, the beauty of entrepreneurship is just figuring it out. But I always want to take the consumer or the person on the other side of the relationship into perspective.
Absolutely, Mark. No, I'm really looking forward to seeing what develops next with Suits and Sneakers and the Tryst. I just want to go back to Like a Tourist. You're obviously not filming these videos alone. You're traveling around, running around with Gendre, doing drone shots, doing still shots, doing a lot of shots of you eating food, which is a whole different podcast probably, all the yummy stuff you're finding along the way. But maybe just give us a background on, in terms of the intensity of putting a video together. I mean, some of these videos, maybe 10, 15 minutes long. I think the road trip one was a little bit longer. But that's not a 10-minute filming session. That is maybe 2 or 3 days filming and in hundreds of hours of editing. I mean, that's quite an intense thing to do for such a short piece of content.
Sure. Talk about playing the long game. So a typical video will take a minimum of 3 days to shoot. Even before you start to shoot, there's an enormous amount of storyboarding and research that goes into it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a professional YouTuber. I'm learning as we're going along. So before it was rock up and shoot. Now it's storyboard, research, plan the scenes. Cool. Then you shoot. Minimum 3 days. Our Cape Town video took us 6 days to shoot, morning to night. We got back home with 24 hours of raw footage, which you're eventually going to condense into 20 minutes. Now, this is where I have to give credit to Alexandre, my videographer. Our Cape Town video took him nonstop 6 weeks of full-blown editing. 6 weeks, every day, Monday to Friday, he edited until for 6 weeks to get 20 odd minutes out. And that's kind of become our standard, is that a video now takes us about 4 to 6 weeks to edit full time. As we speak right now, we're about to come out with the next episode of the road trip, but it's been 2 months since we posted. And that's because we got editing. And then normal work came in and we had to pause for a little bit. Yes. And now we're like, okay, we're 95% done. Let's quickly finish it up this week. So it is intense. I wish I could. We're going to create a behind the scenes video of what it takes to shoot one of these videos, because I think people would appreciate it very differently. But I've also tried to not make too much of a thing about it, because it's a labor of love for us. I mean, we just love traveling around the country, visiting new places, trying out the food, meeting new people, and capturing this on camera. But yes, to your point, since you asked, it is one of the most intense things we've ever done. And that's why with Like a Tourist, we're trying to find different monetization models to start to pay for the hiring of more resources. Because right now it's just Gendre and I. We fly the drones, we film it, we edit it, we shoot it, we take the pictures, we do the writing. It's intense. And it's not, and Like a Tourist as of right now makes no money.
Sorry, Mark, you've done really well to get some amazing partners on board. Lyft Airlines, Feldschoon, Sasol, and Kia already. And that's just based off a couple of videos. It's not like you've worked or done hundreds of videos and other partners come in. They've kind of bought into the idea already. I mean, Nick and the team at Feldschoon, just absolutely amazing. They're almost up for anything. How important were these partnerships, and what do they each bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no question that partnerships are vital, especially in our space. A lot of these partnerships came about because of the work I've done with Suits and Sneakers before, or, you know, it's built on all the other stuff I've got. So if I was just starting out, I would never have got the likes of KLM or Discovery Bank or Kia or any of these, but I had former relationships with them. To be honest with you, I mean, obviously they've been super valuable, but we have never been able to quite figure out the partnership model, because in South Africa, we're just not advanced enough. The views aren't high enough to kind of justify a high enough spend. So we've always, I mean, don't get me wrong, these partners have been incredibly gracious in how they've helped us, because something is better than nothing. But it's not a viable model, the brand partnership model. What we should be making, what we should be turning per video from a revenue perspective is R250,000 to just, that's literally with a 50% profit margin on it.
Mm.
You know, you're kind of talking about $125,000 per video to produce it. That's excluding my time. If we put that in, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
So, but for them to spend that money, we can't give them the return. So they've never quite given us what we deserve because we've never been able to quite create what they deserve. Mm. So the partnerships have been great. They've been helpful. I don't want to downplay them. But now we're moving on to our next play with Like a Tourist, being that we're building our own booking platform. And the reason simply is, could we generate revenue in that way? We just want to use the revenue to increase the size of our media team.
Mm.
Because right now I'm funding the Like a Tourist shortfall. Mm. You know, I pay the videographer salaries and I take my time out, et cetera, to go do it because I love it, but I would like it to get it to wash its own face. But again, it's been 18 months and it's finally starting to creep toward that destination. And again, that's why I say to people, like, entrepreneurship is brutal. You know, for example, we've done 1 million views almost in the last year. Remarkable. What people don't see is all the things you've had to do to get to that point. And so we glamorize it. Wow, Like a Tourist has done so well for a little startup that's on the side.
Mm.
It's like, no, I've spent more money than I should have. You know, there's a lot of opportunity cost there. There's a lot, and we've put a lot in. And if you did a pure ROI analysis on Like a Tourist for now, you'd have to say it's a terrible return on time, effort, and money. But if you're thinking about it from a longer term play, and also the joy factor that you get, knowing that this is a great way to contribute toward the economy from a tourism perspective and so forth. So it's the right thing to do, but on whose dime? Do you know what I mean? Like, it does wear thin. Some months it's like, oh, it's the right thing to do. Like when I get some person giving me stick in the comment section because they didn't like a part of the video, you know, I want to quickly grip them through the, but I mean, you know, I'm joking. It comes with the territory, but like, part of me wants to grip that person by the scruff of the neck and say, hey, you've got a big mouth for someone who's not in the arena. Do you want to come this side and see what it takes to put these videos up at no cost for your enjoyment?
Hmm.
So that's why I talk about the monetization aspect. A business is not a business if you can't learn to monetize it. We shouldn't look down on businesses. Like, if someone were to call me greedy for wanting to monetize Like a Tourist, they just don't understand business and they just don't understand what we're about. For the longevity of Like a Tourist, we have to learn to monetize it. I think brand deals can be part of that. But in South Africa, we're just not well, the ecosystem isn't well developed. Mm. In the US, people will offer you $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 for an insert. Here, you just don't have the reach, you don't have the numbers, even though our videos have done very well. Businesses are like, you know what, I could do with that money. And to a degree, I get it. Mm. So they have been super helpful. Without them, I don't know if we would have got going. But if I'm honest, they are not the lifeblood of. I love having partnerships with people like Nick from Feldskun or these guys. But we more like help each other out.
No, that's good. Yeah. That's good, Mark. And the thing is, you have to start somewhere. I mean, who knows where this will go? I mean, if you don't do the hard yards, you can't enjoy the fruits of your labor eventually one day. There's only one way to do it, and that's to go through it. And now you're starting this new angle where you want to build your own booking platform. Maybe just in a nutshell, give us, what is the big idea there? I mean, there's so many options available. I'm not going to name your future competitors, but that landscape seems to be so full already. You're going to have to come with a great angle or something to get people's attention.
Yeah. I mean, it really stemmed from the idea that I obviously, whenever I'm on the road and I'm traveling and I'm shooting a video, I cannot tell you how many people come up to me and go, I watched your video. That's why I'm here. I watched your video and then I did this, including where they stayed and what they did. So we started to think about it a little bit and we were like, okay, hold on. What we've done is built a business back to front. We've built an audience before we've built a product with Like a Tourist. You know, if you consider 1 million views in the last year, and if you just look at the reach that I'm getting with the social media posts when I post images about the places, we've also done a great job with the accommodation spots because they'll give me two nights for free, but they're giving up a room that was empty to begin with for me to come stay there. I'm giving up my time. So the cost to them is negligible. The cost to me is my time. But, you know, I love what I do. I want to help. And so I've gone and I've managed to help some of these accommodation spots. When you've got 500,000 people on Facebook and I put up a post about them that moves, it moves the needle for them in a big way too. So I'm on good sides with them too. So we sat there and we thought, okay, our point of differentiation with the booking platform is simply that we're a content first platform. We exist to activate South Africa on all ends. We exist to make, to hopefully inspire more locals to act like tourists in their own country. And then at some point, we're also going to build out an ecosystem that tries to bring more foreigners to South Africa. And you will know this. We won't have to tell you this. You will see it through our videos, through the content, through everything. And so if that resonates with you, if our story resonates with you, then you might want to start using our booking platform as opposed to Airbnb, booking.com, Lakaslop. And by the way, these are great platforms. I use them. So I have no qualm. I actually think that competition drives innovation. So I keep joking with Lakaslop lately. I keep tagging them on social media posts saying, I'm coming for you. I think they're receiving it quite well. I think there's enough space for everyone. But we're going to especially focus on bringing foreigners to South Africa. That's a space where I can completely disconnect myself from the local landscape. And then, you know, John, without getting into too much detail, I'll figure out over time how to make our booking platform a little bit more unique and whatever. But I know the content angle is the one that people love. You'll be able to visit our website and see in blog form with the videos everything and actually be able to press one button that books everything or adds everything to a cart, for example. We're also not just going to do booking for accommodation, but we're going to start to work on experiences. We will become the number one platform website in South Africa for tourism in South Africa. It's just a matter of time. So I think that that's the way we'll drive points of differentiation. And, you know, what's the worst? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But I just got a feeling based on the reaction to our content that we're onto something there and that we have enough. You know, all businesses need 1,000 true fans. There's that guy, Kevin Kelly, he speaks about that content.
Yes.
That resonates with me. You just need 1,000 people who watch your videos who think, every time Mark comes up with a video or Like a Tourist comes up, I watch it. You need 1,000 of those people who love what you do, who get the essence of what you do to speak about you, and you got a real business.
Absolutely. So, and this should tie in nicely with your other recent thing that you've launched, which is your LinkedIn page called Showcasing South Africa to the World. And all of this is driving, I mean, you're hitting it from every angle. You've got the videos, you've got the LinkedIn side, you've got the booking platform side to say, listen, guys, take us seriously. We are here at the bottom of South Africa, but come and visit us. We've got so much to show you.
Yeah. And then obviously because of my tie to Zurich, which means my tie to Europe, it's just a matter of once I get the booking platform, I'm going to, you know, start creating some guerrilla marketing tactics this side of the world to get people to understand how incredible South Africa is. So, you know, we've just started planning our first lot of suits and sneakers events in Zurich that are coming toward the end of the year. And so then I get to lure people in because of a specific suits and sneakers topic, but the actual event is brought to you by Like a Tourist. And all we want to do is tell you about South Africa. So there's these interesting ways, right, that you can get people. And I know that once, if you just give me 5 minutes, I guess that's the public speak at me. You give me 5 minutes to share with you why South Africa is incredible. And I use the content that we've created as my background. It's going to be pretty hard to not be curious about coming to South Africa. And then through the booking platform, we should be able to see and measure how many people do come to South Africa from our booking platform because we'll have the statistics. And then that gets very interesting. The first goal is, what do we have to do to bring 10,000 people from abroad to South Africa through our platform? You can imagine what 10,000 people, additional people, looks like for our economy. 10,000 people have to fly to South Africa, have to stay at accommodation spots, have to eat, drink, shop, rent cars. That's why tourism, certainly from foreigners, is such a lucrative thing. You don't need a change of government to enact it. It's just super powerful. For every 10,000 people you add in terms of foreign tourists, the economy of South Africa shoots through the roof. More jobs are created. Europe needs to know about South Africa, man. Europe, especially because it's same time zone, one flight over.
Yes.
You know, the quality and the value for money and. So big plans. John, the only thing I can say to you is I have no clue how it works out. I'm just sticking to the Like a Tourist mantra that every day I wake up, I just try to figure out how do we put one foot in front of the other the next day?
No, that's the best way. And I think that's the South African way. We don't need to have a plan for everything. We just need to know this is the right thing to do. I'm going to do it. And people are going to come along for the ride. And I think people are already coming along for the ride. And I just wish you all the best for all of this and can be following your story closely, watching the videos, liking the content. And Mark, before we wrap up today, and obviously this is quite an ironic question because you're sitting overseas, but are you in your right place after everything you've been through, getting kicked out of school, building suits and sneakers, the tryst, speaking, traveling, everything like that? Have you found your right place?
Hand on heart, I have truly. I will juxtapose that with, it took 40 years. It really took all the ups and downs. It took so many things. You know, Steve Jobs, I hate him for this because this was so good that it's so hard to connect the dots going forward. I just turned 40 3 weeks ago. And now that I look back, I look at all the dots I threw, the ones I missed, you know, the experiments that were failed. I look at all the things that you thought in the moment was bad. It's all led to this point where I just feel like I'm cracking it. I don't mean from a monetary perspective. I just like I wake up every morning and I'm excited to do what I do. I feel like I found the perfect balance between monetizing what I love, but also just doing good in the world. And I'm human like anybody else. I wake up grumpy sometimes. I don't have good days. Sometimes I don't have good weeks. But what a journey. I the best compliment I can give to my own life is that I wish more people got to experience some of what I've managed to experience just in the last 20 years. What a journey. For all the ups and downs, I do feel like I'm in the right place. So this is a story for another time, but I've been working on this concept of a death letter, which you write when you're alive. And so you don't wait to the day you die or near your death to be okay with life and to share with the world what you've been through. It's like you update it every so often. And I've been writing it again lately, just thinking, I don't want to go tomorrow. I feel like I've got so much life left in me. But if something were to happen and that was me, what a life. You know, what a life to live. I've had a go and I don't want to, you can see just, I am grateful, but it comes from, I've just thrown so many darts at the dartboard and 99% of them miss. And it's just like, it's part of it.
Yeah.
So I've had a great life. I wish it for more people. I think when you get to this point that you're enjoying your life so much, part of why you want to run the suits and sneakers events, part of why you want to showcase South Africa more, whatever, is because you want other people to feel the same.
That's, I think, easily our best answer to that question that we ask all of our guests. And I think I'm also in the 40s now, and you think back, you've done so many crazy things, but like you feel so young still. Like people say, oh, you're getting old. I'm like, I feel like I'm 18 years old. And I feel like I've only lived a third of my life. I lived to 120. I'm not even halfway. I'm not even a third. Yeah. There's just so much to do. You've got so much energy, and you're not scared to make mistakes. So you've got a history of making mistakes, but like you make better mistakes and you learn better lessons that takes you on a better path to achieve even bigger and better things. So, you know, these 40s that we're in now, I mean, it's the prime of your life.
John, you're so spot on. Look, thank you so much for having me, man. What a privilege it is to be able to even be in the position to have these types of chats. And big ups to you for creating your own labor of love to give this gift to other people.
Thank you so much, Mark. Really appreciate your time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wrap it up there. Please follow Mark on LinkedIn, social media everywhere. Please also check out Like a Tourist on YouTube. Stay tuned for a lot more content and a lot more other things up his sleeve. And yeah, Mark, thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next time at the right place.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you so much, Mark.